today.
All right. Yeah. I'm rolling already.
Oh, shit.
No, that's okay.
Damn.
What's up? Welcome to an all-new episode of Oliver Voice Over the Kiff VH. I'm your host, Kiff VH, and my guest today, you've heard her name on most of the episodes of this podcast. She is my friend, my agent, and I'll let her tell you more about herself in our conversation. Please welcome the lovely, the talented Pat Brady. Pat.
Thank you, Kiff. It's a joy to be at my office. Thank you for accommodating me by bringing in your equipment here at CESD, yes. Cunningham, Escott, Slevin, and Doherty. And my name is Pat Brady, Joel's. I'll put Bob's name in there, but professionally I'm Pat Brady. I have been an agent 39 years. I started off as a voiceover agent, and then I went to be an on-camera commercial agent for the longest while.
Oh, man.
And then I stopped for a little while and became a personal manager. But the difference between a personal manager and a talent agent is a personal manager gets a nice commission but never knows when they're going to get it, whereas a talent agent who works at a good talent agency gets a paycheck. So what happened is I married an actor, so I needed a paycheck. So back to agenting I went, and then I was on-camera agent at Kazarian Spencer & Associates at the time, and then I took over the voiceover department. And when Don Pitts, God rest his soul, retired, and then Cindy didn't want to hire any more employees, so I said, oh, well, you know, I'll look around. And I talked to a few of my friends in the business, and then I talked to Paul Doherty, my boss, and he said, come in here and meet with us. And I did, and I've been here 16 years. My partner is Kathy Lizio, who she and I do the animation together. We do animation, ADR for feature films, ADR for television shows. We used to do the video games. Now Sumit does all the video games. And I am a puppeteer agent. I have a very large roster of the best puppeteers.
Oh,
I'm so proud of all of them. And they're working, and my cartoon guys are working, so life is good, other than the fact I'm a cripple.
That was fantastic. I timed that. That was 45 seconds. Well done.
Thank you very much.
How did you get? Well, you're from Southern California.
Yes, I was born in Hollywood and raised in Palm Springs and went to high school in Glendale. So yes, I'm a first generation American.
Well, what did your folks do? Were they?
My dad was in the hotel business for 65 years, and he met my mother at the Hotel Vancouver in Vancouver, British Columbia. They had both got there from other places in Canada and Ireland. And they met and married and came down to California. My father was a front desk clerk at the Ambassador Hotel.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was, and so we got down here, and the three babies in 3 years, and then my mother said, that's enough. And so, you know, we went wherever whatever hotel dad worked at. And so mom was always a stay-at-home mom until, I was a teenager. My two brothers were in the service. And she worked at Kaiser as a cashier.
Really?
Which worked out really well for me, because when I got married at the stupid age of 18 and had my baby at the stupid age of 19 and was divorced at a very smart age of 20, when I had John, my son, Jonathan, my mother was still working at the Kaiser, and so I got everything for free.
Oh,
it
my
was great.
God. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, yes, I'm born and raised Californian, and then, you know, I went to UCLA, majored in theater arts.
Oh, and did you really? Were you performing track, or what was the track?
I was, they tried to do musical theater for a little while at UCLA, and it just didn't work out. So I went there for that, and also the fact that I was, like, scholarshiped up the butt. So
no kidding.
I was very lucky. But this is 1972.
Okay.
And so then I was 8 months pregnant when I was graduating. It was really attractive.
Oh, wow.
But I wanted to be a musical theater performer in New York. That's all there was to it. I wanted to be a character actress. I wanted to be on Broadway. And unfortunately, I got married and had a baby. And so that didn't happen. But I was also a stand-up comic. And I worked at Comedy Store and I worked for Jamie for the Laugh Factory, and then Mitzi opened the Comedy Store down in La Jolla.
Okay.
And so I worked there until my father saw my act, and that's all she wrote.
Your father killed your stand-up career?
Oh my God, I was blue as blue could be. And my father walked in and saw that, and that was all she wrote.
Oh, man.
I haven't done it since. And then I got, my parents said, okay, time for a real job. So I went and got accounting down in San Diego, and I became an accountant. And so Mitzi hired me as an accountant for a while.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, then I married again, and we moved back. We moved up to Los Angeles, and my best friend at the time said, you know, my agent needs an assistant.
Huh.
I said, okay. So I went to work for this woman named Donna Lee Davies, who actually worked here at CESD. She closed her agency. I went to work for a man named Don Schwartz, and then she came to work here.
No
and
kidding. So,
and she passed away a while ago, but when I came to work here 16 years ago, that's her desk I'm sitting at.
Are you kidding
me? No, it was pretty cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And so, yeah, Carol Lynn, who's the world's greatest children's agent, she was our intern. That's how long I've known her. And so, yeah, and then I've just been doing this ever since.
So with that agency, your first agency, as an assistant, what was the scope of what she rep? Was it everything VO?
It was voiceover and kids.
Okay.
And so I helped with the kids, and she had a literary agent who worked with her. But Donna was famous for voiceover. I mean, she had Neil Ross.
Oh, man.
She had Dave Hall. She had quite a few big, big hitters. And when she closed the agency, she brought them here, and they've been at CESD ever since.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
That's so great.
Yeah, she was a great agent, and I learned a lot from her. I learned a lot about the on-camera world from my second boss, who was Don Schwartz, who was like the king of the character actors, because he kind of was one. And then,
were you his assistant as well? Or
No, I became an agent 3 months after I went to work for Donna, because she had to go out of town and somebody had to take the bookings, and in the state of California, you have to be licensed.
So. I see.
So there you go.
What's the licensing process? Is it like you have to do a whole test?
Well, you know, the license belongs to the agency. So you were basically a sub-agent. So it's like, you know, Paul and Ken are the agents, and we're all under their banner. But, you know, you had to fill out a lot of paperwork. And then to become an agency, you have to have they want everything but your blood. And, you know, and then you have to cover your bets on it. It's amazing. When you talk to Paul, he'll tell you how hard it is. It's not an easy, you know, they just got grandfathered in because this agency's been around for 40 years. Mm. So, yeah.
Oh, man. So when you transitioned to being an agent almost immediately, okay. Well, that was your on-ramp. That's fascinating.
Oh,
after that, how did you, and what are some of the things that you learned from Donna when you were in that experience?
Well, you know, you get an ear for it. I've always been, like you, a TV baby. I mean, I knew every show on television, and I mean, I loved entertainment in every way, shape, or form. And a lot of my actor friends are saying, my God, why would you ever want to be an agent?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, then I only have 10% of the rejection instead of 100% of the rejection. And then, you know, they all understood it.
Yeah.
It was very frustrating, Kiff. I got to tell you, you know, when you see a breakdown, it says, okay, woman, 20s, character, can sing. It's like, what the fuck? I don't have, I've got me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can't do it. You can't do it. And back then, way back then, 1980, you literally had to give up your unions. So I had to give up my unions. You don't go on withdrawal anymore.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I mean, there was no such thing as withdrawal back then. You just
gave it up. You make that choice right there.
I made that choice, and I'm glad I did.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, talent agents, unless they're in a small situation, very boutique-y, you know, and they get a minimal amount as a paycheck, and then they live off their commissions.
Yeah.
Well, you know, whereas you have an agency this size, you know, the commissions, it's a great big pool of it, so...
So that's a significant difference. If you're starting a thing or running with a smaller pool, then it's just
so
you're
hard.
Scraping by.
It's so hard. You know, and actors, it's funny. There's so many small agencies that just bust their ass, and then they get one guy who will hit and hit big. And it's so rare that one guy will stay with that agent. It's so sad. And it's so rare. The only one I really know about is Jack Nicholson has stayed with Sandy Bressler since day one.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they wanted him at, you know, everywhere, William Morris, CAA, UTA, whatever, but, you know, he has a loyalty.
Yeah.
Russie Taylor, who is Minnie Mouse, who was one of my bridesmaids, she has stayed with Herb Tannen for, it's got to be 35 years for voiceover, and he's retired, and she still stays with him.
Wow.
She that's what she does, you know. And her husband, the late Wayne, he was with her too. Some people have a loyalty to their agents, and you know, I'm very lucky. Knock on wood. I was very lucky when I left KSA. I got to bring over some of the hitters that I had, and they've continued to be mega successes in this house.
Yeah.
So that makes me happy.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's so wild. Well, you went through it in the first 45
seconds.
Yeah,
I know. Seconds. I told you.
That's all right. But I want to track, because I'm so fascinated by the variety of things that you've done, people, not only the people you've worked with, but the things that you've learned and the things that inform the decisions you make on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
and how those things help, you know, your people and people who want to get in and all that other kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, being a voiceover agent, you know, first of all, you have to know how to record people.
Hmm.
When I learned how to do that when I was at Donnelly Davies, we worked with reels, you know, like big old reels on big old machines.
Like the big tape.
Big tape. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And I mean, seriously, you can see the cuts. You'll know a professional agent who started in the 80s by the cuts on their hands. I have scars all over my little fingers because, you know, you cut it with a razor blade and then you put it back together again.
Yeah.
You learned how to do it there, and then by the time I went back to being a voiceover agent at Kazarian Spencer, we were on to cassettes.
Okay.
So we did cassettes, and then you send the cassette out to your buyers, or you send their demo cassettes. We had a wall. I think Paul grabbed some before he left, because he was there before me. Grab the cassettes because they're just hysterical. And then we went on to CDs, and everybody had the special artwork and the whole bit. And now, thank God, you know, it's all online. It's all online.
It's so
you guys
much
are
now.
So lucky money wise.
Oh my God.
Because I remember, I think Paul Doherty started this massive mail out to all the ad agencies with the actors' CDs. Yes, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. I mean, knocked all the little agents out of the water. It was
just by putting CDs in the hands of the buyer so they
exactly.
don't have to keep requesting.
Exactly. So, and the only buyer really that kept them for casting purposes was the voice caster and Elaine Craig. She kept them too.
The voice caster, I was just in there last week.
Did you see him on the racks?
Yeah, and you still see these, like the tapes.
That's what I cut.
And you see these names of the people who were there. Even Joby Cerny back in Chicago had a wall of tape of, like, you know, here's Amy Poehler and, like,
I know. You know, all it's these so cats. It's so funny. I remember Huck when he ran the voice caster. It's like he even saw somebody looking funny at Paul Frees's reel. He'd stop them because he knows somebody would want to steal it.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's Paul Frees. I mean, I know my husband would love to.
Sure.
So, my God, between him and Corey Burton.
Oh, my God.
The Paul Frees boys.
Oh, boy. That's so wild.
So, yeah, no, and when I was an actress, I never pursued voiceover. I only, you know, I just really wanted to do stage. I didn't want to do anything else.
What was it about stage that
I just love it. I mean, whatever, you know, now you can do a musical on camera for the television. Back then, the only thing was like Cinderella with Leslie Ann Warren. So, or you had to be on the Ed Sullivan Show, part of a musical.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's all I wanted. And it was funny, Kiff, after I started to work for Donnelly and I gave up my union cards, I started doing really bad community theater. I mean, bad. And so, I mean, I didn't think it was so bad when I was doing it, but I look back, you know, and I go over three lanes on the freeway thinking about it. it's like, oh, God, did I really do that?
Well,
and
man.
It's funny because, you know, when you do theater, you make friends for life.
That's right.
Well, I did a production of Damn Yankees at Glendale College, and I was a girl reporter, Gloria Thorpe, and my smoky was Darren Norris.
Are you kidding me?
So Darren and I have been together for 34 years, something like that. And I just love the guy. I just love the guy. And so to this day, we just, you know, I haven't been his voiceover agent because I was his manager. And I gave him to a good voiceover agent. So, but he's just, you know, he's a great guy. But you keep those friendships.
Yeah.
Oh, you! Okay. Every actor has those.
That's it. It's so fascinating how you're a casting together assembles what the rest of your life is going to look like.
Well, here's the best example: is Joe Hanna, you know, my best male friend. He did a production of it was Oklahoma, And I went down to see it because they came up to see my my production of Godspell in Buena Park. And so I went down to see him do Oklahoma. And I'm not exaggerating. Literally, this is a person I talk to at least three times a week for the past 34 years. Yeah. He is my best male friend. I mean, he's a client here. He's always been my client. Yeah. Now, and I mean, he's brilliantly talented, but done so much theater.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's so cool.
You know, I got it out of my system after a couple of years. Went, oh, God, I can't believe this. Oh, my God. If I had to play Sister one more time in Damn Yankees.
Character actress.
Character actress. So that's me.
Well, talking about VO, like as an agent, what's for someone who is trying to break into the industry, like what are the things that grab your attention on someone's, if someone sends you a reel, how do they get
okay.
a meeting?
If I get I get an email and there is a demo attached to it, and I open it up, this is the number one negative. Dear Mr. Brady. I don't go any further. Boom, you're dead. You know, you have to take the time to research this.
Yeah.
All you need to do is get one of those Voices 411 magazines, whatever, or you call the agency, and they will tell you Pat Brady is not a guy. All you have to do is ask. They maybe seem stupid. Just do it. Okay. Yeah. Number two is I need a resume. You know what? I don't care if you've only done theater. I need a resume. For my area of expertise in the voiceover world, I'm an animation agent. Animation actors are just that. They are actors. And I want to know that you have been trained to be an actor. I want to know. I don't give a shit what kind of plays you've been in. I mean, I don't care. I just need to know that you've done them. Or that you've taken an acting class. Or more importantly nowadays, an improv class. And I want to see your improv credits. Don't just send a demo saying, here's my commercial reel. Doesn't do me any good.
Yeah.
I'm not a commercial agent. I'd send it off to Bo and Samit. Let them decide. But to me, personally, I want to see a resume. Now, I got to be honest, for what Kathy and I do, a union card is necessary.
Yeah.
We do not work in the non-union world. And I don't... getting Taft Hartley in voiceover is next to impossible.
Really?
Yeah, because let's face it, they hire you... And they hire you to do two voices because they know you can do two voices. But they're not going to get some brand new actor they don't know can do two voices. Because when you audition, you only audition for the one character.
Right.
But they know that Kiff can do multiple characters. Because you get paid two for the price of one under animation and three voices for the price of one in video game. And they will always take advantage of that.
Yes.
So versatility is so important. Like I said, the SAG card is very important to us, or even being SAG eligible and knowing that you've got the bucks to join when you get a gig. That's very, very important. And to me, I don't know how anybody else in the town feels about it. I need to see some acting on there.
Hmm.
You know, I've been barraged over the years with stand-up comics. I mean, there are some who can act. You know, I mean, and there's some that, I mean, like Kathy Ladman's a great actress. You know, mm-hmm. So I don't think twice. I mean, I want to represent her, but I can't represent a stand-up who just does that and that's all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're famous. It's like Jeff Garcia, our client, who played Sheen in Jimmy Neutron and in Planet Sheen. That's all he does. This is what Jeff does. He does a little Mexican guy with a high voice, low voice, and he makes fun of the police. And that's what Jeff does. And he's like the funniest guy in the world. But, you know, if I'm going for versatility where I need somebody who can do eight voices, unless every eight voices is a little Mexican, is not going to be Jeff.
Right.
I hope you're not listening to this, Jeff.
That's so interesting to hear, though, that the importance of demonstrating your acting skill in a reel, not just your range or not just that.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's so important. And my big problem in... Almost every demo producer in town knows this because I'm, as you well know, I'm more than happy to share my opinions with just about anybody. I am looking to represent an actor, not a demo producer. So because you're really talented doing all the bells and whistles and putting the right music there and the right shotgun sounds, then I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to hear that. Sometimes, you know, if it goes with the story of the copy – I can understand it. But constant. That crap, I don't want it. I don't want to hear it. I love the simplicity of just a regular demo. Kathy would bring people into our studio, into our booth, who didn't have demos. And she would just have them go off, and then she would edit it down. And I got to tell you, those are some of the best demos I've ever heard.
Really?
Yeah. Listen to Kevin Michael Richardson's. Perfect. She did it in the booth. It's like the woman amazes me.
So. That's so awesome. So you get someone's resume and their reel,
that,
and it comes
okay.
to you, and you're like, oh, this is an interesting person. What's the process after that?
Well, CESD is the first one who's ever done this process, and it's paid off well. What we do is I would have my assistant Sam, the best assistant in the world, contact this person and say, you know, your demo interested Pat, your resume interested Pat. So what she wants you to do is come in and potential, which basically means you come into our studio. You did it.
Yeah. No.
You didn't do it?
I didn't, know.
Oh, God. It was like, because we want to know how versatile you really are. That's why, but you had a great demo. How versatile you really are.
Yeah.
And so we will bring that person into the studio, Scott Forbes or Patrick. Our amazing directors will pull copy for your age range, your ethnicity, all that crap, and say, come in here and do this. So you'll read regular animation. But the one thing that Kathy and I really, really love is have somebody come in and do a myriad of voices, even in an improv situation.
Yeah.
And that's what we listen to. And if we like what we listen to, we bring them in. And then they have a meeting with the agents. Now, I'll be honest with you. Somebody could kill in the booth.
Yeah.
And they can come in here and just die. Either they don't know how to, you know, they have no social skills, or, you know, they have Tourette's. I don't know. All I know is that we've had actors come in here and just die. And so I don't know. It's nerves or being cocky or whatever. And we'll put up with that if somebody's got the money to back it up, you know? You know, there's a lot of actors out there, not so much in the voiceover world, thank God.
Thank God.
But there's so many actors out there that are dicks.
Yeah.
You know, but they're great actors. And they're making more than enough money that you put up with that crap. But you know what? If you're just starting out and you get to the point where you have a meeting with the agents, just show your personality. We want to represent nice people.
Yeah.
Because we're really nice.
Yeah.
You know, there's agencies out there who may not be as nice as us, but we'd like to keep that reputation.
Yeah. It was a deciding factor for me. I was with another agency.
Right.
Our meeting is what turned me to say, I want to work with you guys. I want to work with Pat. I want to work with Bo. And you guys were the, like, difference makers for me.
You know, and it's easy. And, you know, we're not one of those agencies that sees people every day.
Right.
You know, we take our time. We all listen to their potential. And then we all decide. You know, actors think that, you know, oh, I didn't get into CESD because, you know, so-and-so doesn't like me. Or I didn't get into CESD because, you know, Vinny doesn't want me because I don't do promos. That has nothing whatsoever to do with it. We all have to agree. And if you don't, you don't. You know, I'm sorry. You know, find a unanimous group.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not here. Those are rare, because by the time we're going to set up the meeting, we kind of know we want you.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you screw up the meeting, I think, you know, it's a fait accompli.
Yeah. And but as an actor, too, like, don't you want everybody to be fans of yours?
Of course you do. You would think.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an actor the other day who came in, and he was just... all he cared about was animation, and he was just doing all these silly, crazy voices, you know, and that's not going to help Bo in commercials or Sameet, and God knows it's not going to help Vinny.
Right.
You know, we don't take people on who just do animation. There are people who just do commercials just because animation is just not their bailiwick.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people who do animation that are not as commercially viable as, say, you. You're very commercially viable because you can be silly, but you have a great announcer's voice, too. But, you know, you have somebody who has, you know, a very animated, cartoony type of voice. It doesn't usually work for commercials unless it's a character.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk a lot. We sit down afterwards. We talk about the clients. And, so, you know, it's a... It's a process.
Yeah.
And I don't know how other agencies do it, but ours is a process.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. It works well.
Yeah, it seems to.
So someone joins their roster. Welcome to CESD. Now, how do they, what's, not process necessarily, because I live the process, I know, in terms of getting emails and auditions and that kind of stuff, but what are the auditions that grab your attention that make you say, awesome, this is the one I want to either front load or make sure that this makes my packet or that kind of stuff, or how does...
Okay, that way. Well, when somebody comes on to CESD, you know, and we're all, everybody's in love. The first thing I do is if I'm the key person, I will take them to our accounting department. We have, without a doubt, the best accounting department of any talent agency. And I'm not just talking commercial talent agents. I'm talking huge ones. Those people over there are amazing. And we are also the only agency that I know of that every actor has their own accountant.
Yes.
So you don't go around the room trying to find who's taking care of your checks. That's the first thing I do, because to me, though we're all great agents and we book ourselves into a stupor, they're like the heart of this place.
Yeah.
So then after that, I see a breakdown. Okay. And my priorities are always pilots.
Hmm.
Always pilots. Get on a pilot and that pilot gets picked up, you're set.
You're set.
And so the way we do things, and most agencies do it this way, I think SPV is different, but we split the town by buyers. Kathy has Warner Brothers, I have Disney. Kathy has Nickelodeon, I have Cartoon Network. You know, Kathy has Sony, I have Fox. And so we do it that way. Sometimes we share buyers who are freelance casting directors who happen to work, you know, both for Disney and for Nickelodeon or whatever like that.
Like a Wes Gleason sort of thing?
Like a Wes Gleason sort of thing. Or, you know, a Ginny McSwain.
Yeah.
Like Ginny would cast for Warner Brothers, and she'd also cast for Disney direct for Disney, so she knows who she wants. So, you know, it's always different.
Gotcha.
But, you know, so we share buyers like that. And a pilot comes out, especially a Disney pilot. Hallelujah. But the thing is, I mean, you're very much aware of this, the Disney casting situation, they've got like six casting directors who are full-time employees because they have multiple shows running.
Hmm.
And so they are very, very judicious about how many people they want to hear. So they say, please submit your top five. Well, I will have 25 guys come in and read.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to cull. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to throw in my guarantee guys every time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if they want Fred and they'll Fred audition for it, they love Fred, they want Fred, I'm not going to put Fred's in when I can put somebody else's in and say, and on the side I'll say, number six, I go, oh, and here's Fred's. Because I know they're going to listen to Fred. I know they're going to listen to Kevin.
Right.
But I want to be able to squeak people in too.
Yeah.
So I always put that on a separate page, and you know, it has served me well so far.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's and being new in voiceover for animation, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
But being old in animation is an uphill battle too.
Hmm.
I mean, there's guys out there who were huge hits in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
You know, what can I say? There's only so many characters out there that are being done by the Eric Bauses of this world or the Ben Diskins. I mean, these guys are in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
But they're so good.
They're so good.
Yeah.
And so versatile. And there's, Bauza can do everybody. If it was, Bauza is like a reincarnation of Mel Blanc. It's insane.
I know. I mean, I love Eric. I mean, he's with SPV. I love Bob Bergen, you know, and he's with Atlas. You know, the thing is that I'm very lucky in this industry that I am friends with talent at other agencies.
Yeah.
And I am not one of those fair weather friends. It's like, all I want to do is hit on you so you can leave that agency and come here.
Yeah.
I'm friends with these guys and I adore them all. I do. It's like, I just did VO Atlanta this year.
Yeah.
And it was great. But, you know, Bergen was there and we had so much fun. And casting directors like Jeff Howell and Mary Lynn Wisner and the girls from Disney and Sarah Sherman. And I was in a wheelchair the whole time, so even Bob, you know, was hired to be give a speech, you know, because they wanted me the previous year,
yeah.
And I couldn't go because The accident happened January 2nd of 2018,
yeah.
And it was like in March. So, I mean, I wasn't even out of the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was, yeah. So, yeah, I love doing what I do.
Yeah.
I do.
That's so great.
Mm-hmm.
What are the auditions that, or the things that people send you in the context of trying to make your top five that grab your ear?
Oh, well, you know, you need to concentrate on the actual breakdown of the character.
Hmm.
Our booth directors are great at that. As you well know, there's some actors that are out there just like, okay, well, I'm just going to read this without reading the intricacy of the character.
Hmm.
And also, I mean, I'm not going to speak on behalf of video games, but you have this character, Zion, you know, age range 20 to 80. He's an old soul, blah, 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 blood type, oh, la, 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 la. You know, it's a whole fucking page of this shit. And then he turned over and says his lines.
Throw, get down, jump,
hit,
go.
Yeah. I'll hit you with my sword. Like, seriously, dude? I know you're the father of three. And your wife had a tube ligation, but I only have two lines to speak. Okay, so that's what video games do, which drives me nuts. Whereas when you have animation, you know, you have a detailed breakdown.
Yeah.
And always study that detailed breakdown before you read at home or read in your agent's office. Now, we're kind of sticklers about getting people to read here at the office. Because we have state-of-the-art booths,
yeah.
The best directors in town, if I keep on mentioning it. Hopefully Scott's listening to this. it's just, it's amazing the difference.
Hmm.
Unless somebody is skilled like you are at working your own booth and doing your own editing, you're not going to get the job. If you give me a bad read, okay, say... The email that we send you, and the copy is due back at 2:00.
Yeah.
We say that, but in reality, we don't send it till 4:00. It gives me an hour at least to listen
review,
to everybody.
Make your decisions all.
But I got to tell you, even if you send it at 2:00 and it's like that shit, you know, it's crap sound in the background. You're doing it in the bathroom because it sounds so pretty when you sing there. I was like, no, it doesn't work that way. So. I don't have time to call you and say, you know, that really sucked. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
It's just, we had one actor who Kathy and I just adored, but he would only record in the kitchen because he just loved the sound of it. And it's a bill. You can't do that. Either come in or, you know, build a booth. And he was so insulted. He just, you know, I'll go someplace else. Well, you do that. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just if you plan to be direct yourself and edit yourself, you better be really good at it.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Fountain of information.
There it is.
Who just keeps spewing.
No, it's wonderful. And sometimes it's one of the things I'm learning is we're having a conversation. It takes a second to process. There's so much. There's so much bad.
I know.
I mean, and that's really, really, I think, valuable and important to hear because people get like, because this technology exists, now I'll just send my thing and it's so easy and convenient. And it's like, yeah, but even sound quality alone, if you're recording on your cell phone in your car versus a guy who's recording on his booth, on his Neumann or over here with Scott or Patrick.
Yeah.
You're going to get your lunch eaten.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, to be honest with you, if you cannot record in a regular studio or if you cannot record in a setup like you've got, do your iPhone in the car. I'm not kidding you. Vanessa Marshall, who's one of our top bookers, she booked a massive gig doing it on her phone because, you know, wherever you are.
Yeah.
Time is of the essence.
Yes.
With animation, we give you a little more wiggle room.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, especially with Vinny, yesterday, I was sitting at my desk, and I'm right across from Vinny's assistant, and she called you and just said, okay, could you get this done really quick? And it was, I think it was like 12:15 or something, and we need it back by 12:45. I'm going, oh.
I was at the gym.
And well, then I saw pictures of you at Disneyland, and I said, oh, dude, no. Don't make him do it to Disneyland. No.
I had booked out for that. I had booked out. My phone was locked up in a bag.
Oh, God.
No, I was at the gym when that phone call came. Kiara called, and I was like, I had my ringer off and everything, and I walked home and I got him the audition. That's it. I mean, this mic, you called me. I was finishing a shift at Disneyland, yeah. And you were like, "You got a British accent?" I said, "Yeah." You're like, "Great, send it to me as quick as you can." Yeah. So I plugged that mic into this recorder, and I recorded four dialects on a Shakespearean monologue, mm-hmm. and next week I was working on Fallout.
See, that's what happens. Yeah. It's just, you know, you never know the timing. When it comes to pilots, like, which, of course, you know, is my priority. Mm-hmm. But I'm not knocking feature films either. Yeah. Feature films, everybody wants to be on a feature film because the residual pool can be amazing. But you will have celebrities who all want to do it. And they, you know, they'll, even the smaller parts, they'll do for scale in a heartbeat for two reasons. My kid really loves these characters. Yeah. Or it's a slot machine of residuals. It never stops.
Yeah.
It's... And, you know, and getting into loop groups. Now, we don't do loop groups per se, but we do when a casting director, when a Barbara Harris or a Terry Douglas, you know, call up and say, you know, we need a certain type of voice, boom, we get that. And that you are in the residual pool of the feature film, which is a nice, there's that. And then the other side, I'm very lucky that I work with Walt Disney Imagineering, as you well know, and yes. The fact that I can submit to Brian Nevsky along with other agents, and if I'm lucky, he'll pick one or two of my clients, and that, you get paid a nice amount of money, but that's it.
Yeah.
You know? But you're immortalized.
You're immortalized.
You are.
Yeah.
You know, you're the auctioneer in the Pirates of the Caribbean, dude. I mean, that other one was there for, what, 50 years or something ridiculous?
Yeah,
like that.
And
I
mean, an album, and I'm there for the rest of it until bombs drop.
Exactly.
Like, it's surreal.
Yeah. You know what? I'll be honest with you. I mean, I have been to Disneyland at least 3 times a year since the day it opened. It was my first birthday. I was a week before my first birthday, and my parents took us the day it opened. My mother's high heels got stuck in the asphalt. It was a very cute story, and I've got pictures. But... So I have gone at least 3 times a year since 1956. No, 55.
55.
And so with me, it's a big deal. You'll go to Disneyland. I have a lot of fun. But now we go to Disneyland so we can hear Grand Bob on the train. My husband, Bob Joles, does the voice of the train conductor. He's the new train. It's not a new train. It's a new route at Disneyland. And... it was like our grandson is like his proudest moment. It was the cutest thing I think I've ever seen. And so we go, and it's like when we go to Disneyland on the 21st,
yes,
to go to Star Wars, we will take the train as far as it'll take us because Grandma's in a wheelchair and he can listen to Grand Bob do his thing.
Uh-huh.
So, and oh, another cute thing is there's an audition for Big City Greens, which is the show that plays Bill. The father on. Well, they're auditioning kids to play Bill as a young boy.
Oh, man.
So we're having John, my son, bring Cameron in.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he's recording with Bob tomorrow. He's very excited.
That's so awesome.
I hope he gets it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But, you know, that's another thing about this agency. I don't know if anybody else has mentioned it on the podcast, but Melissa Berger.
Mm.
Melissa Berger Brennan is, without a doubt, in my 39 years of being an agent, the best agent I have ever met. I'm not exaggerating. She is the voice agent for the youth,
uh-huh.
and she's also a theatrical agent.
Mm.
She's the one that got Darren Criss on Glee.
Oh, wow.
She is amazing. But the kids that she has for voiceover, they kill. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm surprised your girl's not pursuing this.
She's very into it, but she's even more into doing this part.
Oh, the animation part.
She's fascinated by both sides of it.
Yeah.
And she's like, and every time something comes down the pipe, she's like, studies, close the door, I'll record, and then close the door. She's like, okay, I'm ready for you to come and listen. You're like, okay.
Oh, cute.
Yeah,
oh,
it's great.
God.
It's great.
Now she, you know, she, because if your child is well-spoken and well-read, which is so important,
yeah.
You know, this is a great avenue for them, especially if they live in Los Angeles.
Yes.
You know, whereas my family lives out in the desert. So to me, it was just an excuse so I can get hugs. So, yeah, no, Grandpa was like, come on, honey. No, you can't have him back, Bob. He's mine. And we got a new dog, and he's just crazy about the dog.
It's an adorable dog.
Thank you very much.
Yes, of course.
Weasley is our king, is the name of our dog, and he is a Pomeranian with a big streak of orange down his back. So, and he's a demon from hell.
Thank you, man.
Oh, he's driving Bob crazy. Oh, my God. I mean, oh, please. No, we got him because he's going to be an emotional support dog when he gets through with his training.
So there's training to be an emotional support dog?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, I've been diagnosed with PTSD. And so what happens is when I'm triggered, I just go into a fugue state and I relive the accident.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, the pain, the sounds, the feel, everything. And so the quicker I can get out of it, the better it is. And so the doctor said, I recommend an emotional support dog.
Yeah.
The last dog we had was a basset hound. I really don't want that plopping on me. But so we got the little guy, and I had a good healthy seizure a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. And I was on the floor, and Weasley was right there. He has not had any training. He just naturally just started licking and scratching and just waking me up out of it.
Wow.
So I told Bob, I don't give a shit how much poop he has in the house. He saved my life. And he goes, yeah. Oh, bullshit. He goes, I was going to be there in a minute. I was making you a drink. Come on. I would have been there in a minute.
It's like having a sidekick for Bob. It's like Bob can be Batman, and then you've got Robin to come and help out.
Yeah, my little Robin Weasley.
Are you comfortable talking about the accent?
Sure. What happened? Yeah, I was on January 2nd, our first day back to work in the new year. I was driving home, which is so easy. I mean, I just, we're in West Los Angeles, and I was going to Beverly Glen off of Sunset, and I was just driving on Sunset, and then right on the corner of Beverly Glen and Sunset, I had the green light. There was a car that was in front of me. The car went. I went right behind him, and then this person decided he was going to jump the line of the people who wanted to make the left turn going west on Sunset, and he rammed into me at 60 miles an hour, hit the front of my car, and then with the inertia, it spun his car around, and then the back of his car T-boned me. And I was by myself, thank God, and I felt the hit, obviously, the first one, and then when he came at me, I dove to the center of the car.
Huh.
And next thing you know, I hear this voice going, honey, 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 honey. And I'm going, I thought it was like that kid from YouTube. Linda, Linda, Linda. He's going, what the? What? Honey, are you married? Are you married? Now? I actually said that. I went, now? And he goes, no, husband's phone number. Husband. Oh, okay. So I gave him Bob's number.
Uh-huh.
And then I went out. Uh-huh. And the next thing I remember, I kind of opened my eyes, and I knew I was in an ambulance. Okay. Uh-huh. So I get to the hospital. I'm out. Mm-hmm. And in the interim, I was in the hospital for like 2 hours, and then they called Bob. Because Bob's like at home with dinner.
What's going on?
He had literally, I just talked to him on my fancy phone in my car, my non-touchable phone, 2 minutes before I got hit. And so when I woke up, I was in a room with, 20 people. I had a trauma team. I had an orthopedic trauma team. I had a heart team. What had happened was I broke both my arms, my humerus is on both my arms and my shoulder, broke both my legs, what's that big old long bone? Femur.
Femur.
Okay. Both my hips, which are attached to the femur bone. And then my ankle, this is the worst part, shot out of my foot. It was really gross. And then my knee was pulverized. So basically, it's metal now. I don't have much bone left.
Mm-hmm.
And which ended up shortening my legs. But the worst one was that I had two ribs that cracked and one pierced my aorta.
Jeez,
so man. I was bleeding to death in the ambulance. And it was, 6 months later, Bob and I went, you saw the picture, Bob and I went over to the firemen. As a matter of fact, it was a year ago yesterday.
Oh, wow.
We went to the firemen to thank them and buy them all lunch for saving my life. And they said they literally had bets that I wasn't going to make it to the hospital. The hospital is less than a mile away. It was UCLA. So it's been horrific.
Yeah.
I was I was at home. Okay. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, intensive care. Then I was in the hospital for a week, and then I went into rehabilitation for four months. And when I got home, I wanted to go back to work, but I couldn't physically do it.
Yeah.
So Paul had arranged for a computer to be sent to the house and so I could work from home. So I worked from home until September, and then I came back in, and I was in the wheelchair because I was having a problem with one of my legs, and I fell, and I broke my leg. And so I had to go back in and have the whole operation done again on my left leg. And then, so basically it's been 8 operations in less than a year. And then Paul had set everything up at home, so I stayed home until I just came back here physically full time 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So, and it's hard. Oh, Kiff, it's a bitch. Because, you know, you see me. I can barely walk, but I have Sam, who is great. Mm-hmm. Joanne, who is the vice president of the company, who is an amazing woman. She runs the place, basically. And she just told me, you work till you can't, and then go home. Because even though I get horrible traffic, it's just easier for me to sit in my car for an hour than it is to sit at that desk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, they've been very accommodating. And, yeah, there were a lot of changes made in the company while I was gone. So, you know, I had to assimilate to that. But, I'm just, you know, I'm full tilt.
Yes.
I was very lucky. I booked like a maniac when I was in bed. It's like, maybe you should stay in fucking bed. Yeah.
It was surreal to like get auditions and things from you during that time because it was this. I mean, you know, obviously we're friends on Facebook.
Right.
We watched your progress and development with bated breath.
It was so easy. You know what? I mean, some people were giving me shit about putting on Facebook, but believe me, it took care of so many of my friends and my family. They were bugging the shit out of me.
Of course.
So,
and that, you know, and you're like, we don't want to. Bob's busy. Bob's trying to make you food and run errands and maintain his career.
Yep.
And you know, so you know, we're gonna, you know, you want to do, but you don't know how to do. So it's like you'll do with your heart and all that. And
well, I was very lucky. I had some wonderful, wonderful friends and clients who came to see me when I was in rehab, came to the house. I mean, and then the companies. The companies who sent flowers and did things for me, and you know, and then your union, though we fight like cats in a bag, they gave Bob a very generous Uber Eats card.
Oh,
just call and order food, but you know he's been great. I'd be dead without him. He's a wonderful husband, a great actor, and a great grandfather. Not a great grandfather, but a really good grandfather. He's wonderful. I'm just so lucky. And, you know, he's on 2 series, so it's a wonderful thing. And when, you know, Disney starts paying their residuals, he'll be very happy. We're having a problem right now
with
Disney residuals.
Really?
And I have no guilt talking about it in public. There's something going on with a Disney residual system. I don't know what it is, but all I know is if you have problems with getting your Disney residuals, please contact your union in the theatrical residual side for animation.
Okay.
I gotta tell you, almost every one of my clients has put in a claim.
Is that including feature too, or is it just television animation?
It's just television.
Okay.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. And so, you know, I mean, we're talking Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Mickey Mouse Railroad, DuckTales, Big City Greens. I mean, Elena of Avalar. They're not
paying their residuals.
They're not paying their residuals. That they put in a, what we've been told is they put in a system that threw out all the information they originally had, so they've had to rebuild and rebuild and rebuild.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're wonderful people. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But, you know, You know, Mama needs a new wheelchair.
So.
Bet you'll never hear that again.
Oh, Pat, our time is coming to a close. I'm so grateful for the time that you took and for your candor and sharing all that.
Oh,
and like, you know, sorry. No, one of the things that so many of my guests have said over the course of this run of the show has been some of their favorite Pat Brady phone calls. The Pat Brady phone call that tells you, you know, for me, that you're the pilot of the Millennium Falcon, that you're, you know, that you are a part of the Pirates of the Caribbean, and so many other people have been able to share that. Oh. So I just wanted to express.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
It's the best part of being an agent, I gotta say. And the day that I don't care is the day I retire. But, I mean, we all love to put out those phone calls, and I will never have an assistant do it for me. So there you go. Thank you,
awesome.
Kev.
Yay. Thank you so much, Pat. If people want to follow you on social media, are you active in the social media world?
I'm active. just, you know, going to CESD on CESD Voices on Instagram is great because I'm on there. The whole office is on there.
Awesome.
So that's a good thing. I have an Instagram, which I don't do shit for. But I am the queen of Facebook. But the thing
yes,
is, I have like over 1,000 requests. It's like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
Because it's a personal and a professional one. So
yes.
If you book something, then boom, it's CESD Pride.
Yes.
You know? But, you know, if my grandson, you know, got the scoring goal at soccer, it's Grandma Pride.
That's right.
Thank you, Kiff.
Awesome. Thank you, Pat. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Peace. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at KiffVH or on Instagram at KiffVH or on Vero at KiffVH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
Yeah.